Drive Time on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Think about what can go right when you plan for the future. Talk to a financial broker and start your savings plan today.
Now, as you just heard, tens of thousands of mourners gathered in Rome this morning for the funeral of former Pope Benedict at the Vatican. Among them was his biographer, Father Michael Collins of the Dublin Diocese, who joins us now from Rome. And you're very welcome, Father Michael, to the programme this evening. Perhaps you might just tell us firstly about your own relationship with Cardinal Ratzinger. When did you first meet him? As he was then, I believe.
Oh, good evening, Sarah. I met him, I think, when I was about 22. I was working as a guide in St. Peter's Basilica for a few summers, and he used to celebrate Mass on a Thursday morning at the German College beside St. Peter's. So I was one of the servers assigned, and that's when I met him first. And over the years, I kept on bumping into him. I always found him a very affable, pleasant man, kind of a grandfather type of person. And then that's true. I was able to write a book just about a month after his election, and I was asked by Columba Press in Ireland to do a very short biography to give people an idea of who he was. And I gave him a copy then when it was done, and he was very surprised, and he said, "How did you get it done in a month?" And I said, "Well, I hadn't much to write about because you haven't been in office long." I said, "I hope I'll get to do a second edition." So he had a good laugh over that. And then I did another book on the Vatican a few years later, and it was mainly a photographic book. And he gave me permission to follow him around for the day, which was, you know, kind of behind the scenes. So I suppose that's how I kind of got to see him close up. And I got to like him, I suppose, in that sense also.
How would you assess his legacy?
His legacy is going to be light and shade. I think every time you look at somebody's life, especially a life of 95 years, is also always going to be the ups and downs. And I read a very good obituary in The New Yorker today by Paul Ely. And he made that point. He said, you know, he's a man who came from an era of suppressing the news about child sex abuse, avoiding scandal at all costs. And that certainly is going to dullen his legacy for absolute sure, because he was of that era. The only thing, it's true to say that when he became Pope, he did at least take the first steps to set things right. But even then, he didn't go so far as to saying all the cases had to be reported to the civil authorities, and that came under Francis. So you can see this is something which is slowly coming out and hopefully rectifying itself. But his legacy also will be in the whole area of theology, because he was a very, very competent theologian. You know, he spoke Latin and Greek fluently. He'd read all the ancient fathers. And I remember on one occasion meeting the Dean of St. Albans in England, and he said that the previous day he and seven Anglican bishops had a meeting with Ratzinger when he was still working in the office for the Doctrine of the Faith. And he said, of all of us, Ratzinger was the only one who'd read Martin Luther in the original German. He said the rest of us were all Lutherans, but we'd never read the full works.
Okay, so great theologist. But just to bring you back to the child abuse inquiries, just for a moment, there was obviously that church-commissioned inquiry that was around a year ago now, which found that Pope Benedict had protected abusive priests by failing to discipline them and allowing them to continue their ministry. It identified 497 victims of abuse in the Archdiocese.
Exactly.
I know Pope Benedict had denied he was aware of what was happening, but German investigators found it overwhelmingly likely that he was aware of what was happening. You talk about a legacy of light and shade. Do you think that aspect of it has created more shade than light?
Well, it's difficult. It's probably too early to give a balance now at this stage, since he only just died. I'm sure that'll take, you know, a few months, years to evaluate. But absolutely, when that report was published in Munich, the investigators said there were meetings that he was at, and they specifically pinpointed a meeting which he said he wasn't at, and they discovered that he was. And then when they went through the transcript, it was a digital transcript of 8,000 pages, they discovered that there was that mistake. And Benedict, who was 94 at that stage, when he learned of it, he said, "I've made a mistake, it's my fault, but we've got to get back and rectify it." So even at that stage, it was, if you like, hounding him. But that was the price he and all the bishops and superiors paid for decades, I don't know how long, maybe even hundreds of years, of cover-up scandal, avoid bad press, avoid upsetting the faithful, that whole kind of nonsense, really. And as a result, all the not only did the children suffer, and they were tortured and raped, and we know all the stories about that, but it was perpetuated, and the greatest insult on top of that was that the perpetrators were protected and covered up, and that'll be a shame forever. It's nothing can wipe that away. Nothing.
Why did you go to the funeral?
Well, I suppose, as I say, I have that knowledge of him over the years, and I always liked him. I admired him as a theologian. He was Pope as well, and there's a sense of history today. And I just wanted to be part of that and ultimately to pay my respects to a Christian soul.
It was celebrated by Pope Francis, but I know there have been some observations that the homily was unusually short and there was only one reference in it to Benedict himself. I don't know what you thought of that, or did you work on it?
I thought, exactly. I was very surprised at that, because I know Pope Benedict, Pope Francis said when Pope Benedict died that he was a noble and kindly soul, etc., and he paid tribute to him. But today was a very unusual homily, because I remember when John Paul II died, Benedict, as Cardinal Ratzinger, gave the homily at the funeral, and he spoke very nicely about him. He said he could imagine Pope John Paul waving from the window of heaven down at them all, and there's something very warm about it. But Francis was very, very short, and concentrated completely on the scriptural readings, and only in the last sentence or two he mentioned Pope Benedict. So I was, not only I was taken aback by it, but that's kind of the talk of Rome this evening.
And is there any speculation in the talk of Rome this evening as to what might be at the core of that? I mean, was there animosity between the two men, perhaps? Or what we've just discussed in relation to the child abuse inquiries? I don't know, are people talking, or what are people saying?
Yeah, it is. Well, everybody's trying to kind of figure it out, because very often Pope Francis, as you know, he has a prepared script, and he then suddenly says, this is very boring, somebody else wrote it for me, so I'm going to say what I really wanted to say. Now, that works a few times, but he's done that an awful lot, and this wasn't the day to do something like that, so he stuck to his script, and it was just a very unusual thing, and to me, he didn't bring anything of the warmth of Benedict, and maybe he just said, well, look, in other words, Francis could have said, I'm aware of this legacy of light and shade, and I don't want to say anything which is going to rebound and people in years to come. For example, I'll give you a good example. At John Paul II's funeral, people were shouting out, make him a saint immediately, make him a saint immediately. And the process was initiated by Pope Benedict shortly after he became Pope. And he did become a saint. And now people are beginning to say, well, you know, there was a lot of cover-up during John Paul II's reign, and he knew about what was going on, and yet he's declared a saint. Mm. Did we act too quickly?
That
and, you know, the jury will be out on that. Yeah. So I can't figure it out. To be quite honest, Sarah, I can't really figure it out, but I'll tell you, there's a lot of tongues wagging. And it was also interesting looking at Pope Francis, because, my God, I haven't seen him for a long time, but he's got so old and frail. I'd say frail. Really, I wouldn't say he's infirm at all. Oh, yeah. He's put on a huge amount of weight on his stomach, I noticed. And he came in just underneath me. I was up in the loggia overlooking the piazza, and he was wheeled in a wheelchair underneath me. And I couldn't believe it, because I only just caught sight of him, and there was nobody around him. He just kind of was wheeled in by his assistant and wheeled up very quietly. And when I saw him being kind of lifted out and assisted out of his wheelchair, I noticed he's so slow. Everything is slowed down about him. And I just thought, he just turned 86 on the 17th of December. Just thought to myself, now that Benedict is gone, it's an open field for him to do what I think is probably going to be the right thing, to be the next pope to abdicate, not wait until he gets into really bad health. Although he quipped one time on a plane journey a few weeks ago, he said, you know, my problem is my knee, not my head. And I govern with my head, not my knee. But at the same time, you know, it doesn't give a good optic, really, to see a very elderly man, hardly able to walk, carry on in the papal office. And maybe now, as I say, there's a vacancy for the Pope emeritus, put it that way.
Yeah.
Maybe he's got to stop and think, you know, I like being Pope. I've got a lot of jobs that I want to get build. And I'll tell you one thing he's really, really obsessed about is the child abuse thing. He's so focused on that. But he has said, I've heard this, you know, that he said to some of his advisors, he says, I can't get everybody on the same page with me. And it's very hard. And I can understand that, you know, you're dealing with 1.3 billion Catholics. You're dealing with all these bishops and they all have their points of view. And they say, oh, it's all very well to say this, but we've got to think of that while we're doing the other. You know, I'd say it breaks his head sometimes.
Okay.
But, you know, maybe he's got to say, well, look, I'm 86. I've given it 10 years. I never expected. And after all, remember, he was the runner-up in April 2005 when Benedict was elected. The two of them were neck and neck. It was Benedict first, and then Jorge Bergoglio was number two. So if things had gone into another vote, Benedict's votes could have collapsed. Ratzinger's votes could have collapsed. And Bergoglio could have come up again.
And is there is there any obvious successor if he did abdicate?
Oh, do you know what? That's also the talk of the place, because people are naturally, this is the kind of warm-up to the next conclave, because unfortunately, in these few days, because it's winter, it's the Christmas holidays, tomorrow is the Feast of the Epiphany, and in Italy, all the Italians have the weekend off. So they really had to bring the funeral forward, and that's why not huge numbers came to Rome, because physically they just couldn't drop their... I got a Ryanair flight, so it's okay, but not everybody was lucky enough to hop over the Alps very easily.
Mm.
So one of the things is that a good number of cardinals have come to Rome for the funeral. And this, over the next day or two, while they're all here, they'll be all chatting informally about this. And they keep their voices down, of course, you know. And they just say, well, you know, we have to start looking.
Okay, well, I remember the jostling has already started, no doubt.
It has. And I met a cardinal from Sicily a while ago. And I was kind of joking and saying, you know, who's going to be next on the list? And he said, I haven't a clue. He said, I don't even know who the other cardinals are. Like, he was so disarming. He said, sometimes I have to look up on Google to see where they are and where they live. So it's not that easy. You might imagine it's all kind of Machiavelli stuff that you'd find in a movie, but it's not. I don't think they're that organized, really. So time will tell, that's all. You just have to wait and see.
It certainly will. It's been fascinating to speak to you, Father Michael, and thank you very much for joining us from Rome this evening.
But you know, let me tell you, Sarah, you'd never be bored here. There's always some skullduggery going on.
Well, it certainly sounds like it, really, to be honest. So we'll have to have you on again to bring us the update.
On a sad day, but you know, I will say one thing. For his light and shade and his good and bad points, this is Benedict's day. He's gone to God, and I wish him well. And I think a lot of people of goodwill would say that on his funeral day.
Father Michael Collins, thank you very much for joining us.